Let's start as follows, which I may have said last year also. I believe that every single piece I'm about to say is 1,000% true and is supported by sources. You know, whether it all adds up to what I'm going to claim that it adds up to, you know, that's up to you to decide. I think that, you know, the narrative is likely true. I think it's a significant perspective, but I can't convince you that it's shot in the Gemara. And I don't know that I could convince you that it's true, but I think if Henry doesn't record it, it's possible for me to hammer home some ideas that I think we bring to us, or some biases that I think we bring to Jewish history, because we reinterpret Jewish history in the light of the history that we're living. Okay, let's start just pure Torah.
I said be quiet. Didn't you hear?
Uh-oh.
Everyone needs to mute themselves.
All right, here we go. Says the Gemara in Yevamos. Everybody's seen the Gemara inside or knows the story, right? Why do we mourn during Sfiras HaOmer? So says the Gemara, Rabbi Akiva Omer, Lamad Torah b'yalduso, yilmo Torah b'ziknuso. If you learned Torah during your youth, you should obviously continue learning Torah when you become elderly. Hayulo talmin b'yalduso. If you had students when you were young, yihiyulo talmidim b'ziknuso. Shenemar baboker zra zarecha v'la erev al tanach yadecha. This is the lead-in to the story that we know. Rabbi Akiva says that you're supposed to learn Torah your whole life. You're supposed to try to have students your whole life, meaning even if something went wrong, as we know is going to happen, you should continue trying to be ma'amid talmidim even later in your life. Now here comes the story. Amru. Shnei masar elef zugim talmidim hayulo l'Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva had 12,000 pairs of Talmidim. Migvas ad Antipros. What's Gvas and Antipros? So we don't know, but almost certainly it's the name of places, right? Migvas ad Antipros. He had, you know, his empire of Talmidim was so vast that it covered 12,000 pairs from a city called Gvas to a city called Antipros. V'kulan meisu b'perek echad. They all died during one time frame. Mipnei shelo nohagu kavod ze lezeh. It's hard to read, right? They all died during one period, presumably because they were not sufficiently respectful one to the other. V'hayah ha'olam shamem. And the world was desolate. Now, why was the world desolate? So just as a side point, but it's important, you know, at a time of Torah Sheba Al Peh, and when I say Torah Sheba Al Peh, I don't mean it the way we think of it. I mean, literally, nothing is written down. Okay? Rabbi Akiva is the Gadol Hador. And more important than just being the Gadol Hador, Rabbi Akiva is the keeper of the Mesorah. Meaning, all of the oral law flows through him. If all of his Talmidim die, okay, if all 24,000 of his Talmidim die, the oral law, the tradition is lost. You can't look it up. There's no such thing as a Mishnah. Obviously, there's no Gemara yet. It's before the time of the Gemara. There would be no source. There would be nothing to continue Torah Sheba Al Peh. Henry, whatever you're doing, we don't need it. I've lost control of my screen. Henry? All right, I'll keep going. Henry, if you rejoin us, maybe I'll make it bigger. All right. Anyway, what, okay, that's better. Oh, I understand what you're saying. I wasn't, oh, okay, I didn't have the sheet up. I'm sorry. Give me 1 second to find the sheet on my computer, unless you could do it in an easy way, Henry. I'm sorry. 1 second. I apologize. Hang on. Hang on. Share screen. Okay, can you see the screen now? Is the screen okay for everybody?
Yes.
Looks good.
Okay, apologies.
Yes, fine. Great.
Okay, so we're in the Gemara in Yevamo Samach Bet Amud Bet, and we're talking about, right, 12,000 pairs. They died from Gvas Ad Antipros, Vahayah Olam Shamem, right? We would have lost all of the Mesorah, all of Torah Sheva Al Peh. Ad Shabar Rabbi Akiva Eitzel Rabbo Sinu Shebedarom V'Shina Alahem. Until Rabbi Akiva reconstituted the Mesorah. Okay, that's what the lead-in was, right? He has students, they all died, and he reconstituted it. Who are they? Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua. Okay? And literally, V'heim heim ha'amidu Torah osa sha'a. And they reestablished the Torah Sheva Alpeh, right? Stam Mishnah's Rabbi Meir and Stam Tosefta's Rabbi. There's a whole explanation for how these five people in different versions of the Brisa, these five people reestablished, literally reestablished the Mesorah in terms of Mishnayos, in terms of Midrashe Halacha, okay, in terms of Tosefta's. They reestablished everything that had existed beforehand. Let's continue with our story. Tana, kulam mesu mi Pesach va'ad atzeres. All of them died, all the Talmidim Rabbi Akiva died during Sfiras Omer, from Pesach until atzeres, till Shavuos. Rav Chama bar Abba, v'yitem Rav Chia bar Avin, kulam mesu mi Sara'a. They all died a terrible death. Mayhi, Rav Nachman askira. Some kind of choking, very painful death. Okay, this is really the only source, but the real source for our minhag of mourning during Avelus is the story we know. You ask anybody who grew up with any background, why is it that Sfiras HaOmer is a period of mourning? And this is the answer. Because all of the Talmidim Rabbi Akiva died during Sfiras HaOmer. And therefore, we mourn them in the various ways that we have and the various minhagim we have for mourning. And you know, there's no doubt that this is what the Gemara says. It's obviously the truth.
Eli, can I make a very brief comment?
Yeah.
Very brief comment. I recently heard that the Rav said that the Azkara in the Gemara is Lashon Saginor. And what really happened was they were killed by the Romans in part of the Bar Kokhba rebellion. And they were stabbed. They were killed by the sword through the stomach. And they used Askara because they were afraid of the Goyim reading the Gemara that way.
Okay, so that's where we're going. I didn't know it was a Rav. All of the things I'm about to say, as we've discussed before, they're all true. They're all, you know, how and where, how we put it all together, you know, that'll be up to me. But there's no question that what I'm about to say, not only is Jackie right, that without knowing it, I said it last year when I gave the shir, but let's try to look at the Gemara again and see how many weird things there are in this Gemara, despite the fact that we've known the story so many times. Okay, the first thing is, Shneim Asar Elef Zugim. I'll put it back up just so we could see it together. Shnei Masar Elef Zugim. Now, I know math. 12,000 pairs. I know what that means. It means 24,000 Talmidim. So why 12,000 pairs? So you will say correctly so. Well, when you talk about learning, it's Chavrusas. So 12,000 pairs of Chavrusas makes 24,000. But I think there's much more to the phrase, to the term, than Chavrusas. But that's the first question. The second question is, Rabbi Akiva had 12,000 pairs of Talmidim, Migvas Aran Tipros. Okay, what does this remind us of? It's not the first time we've ever seen a description of kind of an empire that reaches from one state to another state. Anybody? All right. Achashverosh rules, Mehovdu Viad Kush. Okay? The assumption is that those are the tips of his empire. It's like saying the president of the United States, you know, rules from, I don't know, from New York to California. They represent two coasts and everything in between, right? Or you would say he has Talmidim, you know, from the Golan to Eilat. Okay, great. The problem is nobody knows what these cities are, Gvas and Antipras. Historians have discussed it for a long time. They don't exist as places that people are familiar with from the time of Rabbi Akiva or any time since then. And it's strange for the Gemara to identify the empire of Talmidim by two places that nobody heard of. That's a strange thing. Next question on the Gemara. Kula mesu misara. This goes to Alan's point now, and it's Askara. It's not bad enough that they died, right? The Gemara has to tell us not just that they died, but they died a terrible death. It strikes me as piling on. Is it really necessary to describe it that way? Okay, those are technical, text-based questions on the Gemara. But there are much bigger questions, and these I think at some point should bother all of us. Let's start with the basic one. What's the most famous thing Rabbi Akiva ever said?
Yeah.
Is it possible that Rabbi Akiva was unable to communicate that basic idea to his Talmidim? And they all died shalom nagu kavod zelazeh, when it's their Rebbe who made it up, who believed that the foundational principle of Judaism is v'ahavta l'recha kamocha. So you may answer, and it's a good answer. You'll say, no, must be Rabbi Akiva said that after they all died. It could be. I could not figure out historically, you know, no one seems to know exactly when Rabbi Akiva said v'ahavta l'recha kamocha. But it doesn't change the fact, even if he learned it from this, was he such a, Rabbi Akiva was a failed Rebbe? None of his Talmidim knew how to behave? And let's assume they were failed Talmidim. And by the way, we don't know the name of one of them. There's no Memra in a Mishnah. None of the Talmidim or Rabbi Akiva are quoted anyplace to the best of my knowledge. Why do we mourn them? Okay, Rabbi Akiva had 24,000 Talmidim and they died and it was very sad. But, you know, they weren't Gedolei Yisrael. It didn't work out. Why would we mourn them? And even if we would mourn them, 49 days? Okay, we have different minhagim, maybe 33 days. But 33 days to mourn the failed Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva, whose names we don't know, who were not knowing kavod zelazeh, we mourn the Beis HaMikdash for 3 weeks, right? 33 days or 49 days of mourning or taking a period of time that was happy and turning it into a sad one for the failed Talmidim Rabbi Akiva, it just doesn't make any sense. And so we have some questions on the Gemara, some parts of the Gemara that read strangely. But the bigger questions, I think, are questions we've all asked ourselves, right? Is this the biggest tragedy that happened in Jewish history? The death of the 24,000 nameless Talmidim Rabbi Akiva, who apparently were not particularly good guys to begin with? Okay, just seems hard to imagine. Now, for me, my rethink of this started when I listened years ago to a sicha that Rav Amital Zatzal, the founding Rosh Yeshiva of Gush, gave on the 40th anniversary of his Aliyah. The yeshiva had a big celebration. And Rav Amital was very emotional and he was crying as he spoke. And he said, he asked himself, you know, how was I zoche to be the first Rosh Yeshiva since Rabbi Akiva to send Talmidim out of the Beis Medrash to fight in a war? The background to that statement is as follows. You know, it's shocking, but there were no, you know, there were no armies. Jewish people didn't have an army from the time of Rabbi Akiva until the founding of the State of Israel. That's just a fact. And in 1948, there were no yeshivas that sent people to go to war. In 1967, there were no yeshivas that sent people to go to war. The Hezder movement started, you know, sometime after the Six-Day War. And the Yom Kippur War was the first time that yeshivos, or Rabbi, you know, that Gush, the Rav Amital, sent guys to go fight in the war. And obviously he was crying because in a small yeshiva, eight guys were killed in the Yom Kippur War. But it was a throwaway line to Rav Amital. But what it meant to me was Rav Amital assumed that the students of Bar Kokhba died in the revolt. And Alan made this point before, and we've talked about this before. It seems obvious that the students died in the revolt. And then the question becomes different. Then why does the Gemara seem to hide the real history of the revolt behind the story of the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva? Okay, so let's start at the very beginning. Let's start with some history. Okay. The Beis HaMikdash was destroyed in the year 70 of the Common Era, right? The Great War against Rome, the first revolt, ran from the year 66 to the year 70. Titus destroys the Beis HaMikdash, right? A couple of years later, he gets the last people. He destroys Masada. But here's the thing that I don't think I ever internalized until I looked into it, and that is, there was no massacre. In fact, there wasn't even such a great exile. Okay? Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai moved to Yavne, and they started reconstituting, you know, post-temple Judaism. But the sense was, and you just have to take my word for it, the sense was this was temporary, that the Beis HaMikdash would be rebuilt. See, it's a question of perspective. For us, who've never seen a Beis HaMikdash, so the idea that we could rebuild the Beis HaMikdash is beyond a dream, or is a dream for us. But in Beis Sheni, they knew. The first Beis HaMikdash had been destroyed for 70 years. There was every reason to think that the second Beis HaMikdash, or that the third Beis HaMikdash, would be rebuilt. And that this Golos would also be temporary, as was the first Golos. That was the assumption. These people had all seen a world in which the Beis HaMikdash existed. It wasn't just a dream for them, it was reality. And so yes, Titus destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, but okay, we've bounced back before. We're going to bounce back now. There was no thought that it was going to be thousands and thousands of years. There was a second revolt against Rome. It really wasn't the Jews who led it. It was from 115 to 117, 40 years after the Churban. Most of it took place outside of the land of Israel. But Rome put down that revolt as Rome put down, you know, almost every revolt in those days. Fast forward to Bar Kokhba, okay? That revolt took place between 132 and 135 of the Common Era. And the problem here is that the history is a little bit vague, right? There was no Josephus of the Bar Kokhba rebellion. There's no real contemporaneous history. There's a Roman historian called Dio Cassius, who himself was born only 30 years after the rebellion. So he has a history, but he wasn't a firsthand witness to it. Hard to know how much to rely on that history. But the broad outlines are clear, both from our sources, we'll see it in the Yerushalmi, and from Roman sources. And that history is different than the one that I learned when I was a kid. maybe it's different than the one that you learned. The history that I learned was, you know, Bar Kokhba led this ragtag battalion of very, very brave rebels, and they had these, you know, attacks in certain places, and they hid. There was a massive Roman army. There was just like a group of people who attacked them from time to time. That apparently is completely untrue. There was a massive war for 3 years between us and the Romans, and we were winning for quite some time. We were winning to the extent that we established our own kingdom. We liberated Yerushalayim. We minted our own coins. And it's possible, this is just speculation, but there are people who think we started rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash. Okay? The lower estimates of our own losses in the war, the lowest estimate is 580,000, and it goes up to 1 million. And the assumption is that Rome lost at least as many, if not more. Okay, this is an enormous war. It's not a guerrilla war. In fact, look at source number two. Just to get a sense, we'll start reading in the middle. This is the Yerushalmi and Tainus. Okay, look at the third line, right where my cursor is. Amar Rav Yochanan, Kol Andrianus Kesar Horeg BeBeitar Shmonim Elef Ribo. Andrianus Kesar killed in Beitar. Beitar is the last stronghold of the rebellion. Shmonim Elef Ribo. It's 800,000. It's 8 million. It might be an exaggeration, but it's an enormous number. And now the Gemara starts describing the troops available in the Bar Kokhba army. Rav Yochanan, Shmonim Elef Zug Shel Tokei Kranot Hayu Makifin Et Beitar. There were 80 pairs of horn blowers that would walk around Beitar. V'chol echad ve'echad hayam mimuneh al kama chayalot. And each of the 80,000 had soldiers beneath him. Right, you're getting a sense for how big the army must have been. V'hayasham ben Kuzba. Ben Kuzba obviously is Bar Kokhba. V'hayalo matayim elef matifei etzba. Bar Kokhba had 200,000 crack troops who did not have thumbs. I'll explain in a second. Sholchu Chachamim v'amru lo. Chachamim sent a letter to Bar Kokhba and they said, Ad emosai ata oset Yisrael ba'alei mumin. For how long will you turn the Jewish people into ba'alei mumin? What's the background? The background is that if you wanted to join, you know, the Sayeret of Bar Kokhba, the elite unit, the Green Berets of Bar Kokhba, so among other things, in order to prove your heroism, you had to cut off your thumb. Now, I think part of that was also so that you would not be a traitor. Right, the Jews were kind of split over the revolt. So presumably, if you cut off your thumb, the Romans knew that you were part of Bar Kokhba's crack battalion. Okay, so Chazal write to Bar Kokhba, you know, for how long are you going to turn the Jewish people into Ba'alei Mumin? Omar Lohan, he answered, V'chiheyach afshar libodkan. How else can I test their loyalty? Amrulo. So Chachamim said to him, "Call me she'eno rochev al suso, vo'oker erez min Levanon. Anybody who, while riding on horseback, cannot uproot a cedar tree of Lebanon, lo yihye nichtav bistratya shelcha. He won't be in your, you know, in your crack troops." And says the Gemara, "V'hayu lo matayim elef kach u'matayim elef kach." Now, Bar Kokhba has 200,000 troops, you know, who prove their bravery by cutting off their thumbs, and 200,000 crack troops who prove their bravery by uprooting trees on horseback. So just to get a sense, he has 400,000 crack troops, just elite troops. The army is massive. Again, it's not, you know, some band of rebels. It's an enormous standing army. And to And to give you a sense for how confident Bar Kokhba was, and this is not to his credit. In fact, the end of Bar Kokhba's life was quite tragic in that he maybe was overcome with self-confidence. But here's what he used to say. V'kad havanafak l'kurva, when Bar Kokhba was going out to war, hava omar, he would say as follows, Ribona da'alma, God, lo tis'od v'lo tichsof. Don't help us and don't oppose us. Halo ata Elohim zinachtanu, lo teitze b'tzivotenu. You, God, have abandoned us. Don't help. We don't need your help. Now, again, it's tragic that Bar Kokhba came to this end of his life. But what it proves is that Bar Kokhba believed that in a fair fight with Rome, he would win because of the numbers, because of the who knows why. But he did not think he needed a miracle to win. He believed in a fair fight with Rome that he could win. Somebody had a question?
Yeah, Ellie, and just one question. It's very odd. I mean, Bar Kokhba is a general, is a brilliant general. He must have known that the thumb is the most important digit on the human hand.
So I'm willing to say the following. You're right that it's a weird thing. You know, it's a big discussion about how literally to understand, you know, a Yerushalmi of this type. And I admit, you know, it's possible that it's not to be read literally. All I'm trying to show from this is that, you know, whether it's exaggerated or not, Bar Kokhba had an enormous army. Okay, whether it was the thumb or something else, whether the numbers are precise, you're absolutely right. But the Rishalmi stands for the proposition, and it's supported by secular historians, that we had an enormous army, that Bar Kokhba led a world war against Rome, with massive casualties, and that's sort of the way that at least I was brought up thinking.
Ellie, it's almost as if to say the Gemara is saying that he was so confident he would go into the fight with telling his army, you can have one hand tied behind your back, meaning, you know, to Jackie's point.
Okay, it's all possible. I don't know enough to say yes or no. It's all possible. But just to give you a sense, you know, historians think that the Roman, no less than the Roman Empire was at stake. The whole Roman Empire, not just the part in Israel. There was a sense that if Israel fell, the empire was going to fall. Hadrian, who is the nephew of Trajan, you know, called in massive troops for the final battle. Okay, the 9th Legion of Rome was wiped out completely. I forget how many legions they have, but it was an enormous part of their army. They suffered huge losses. The story goes that after battle, the general would send back to Caesar a message that says, you know, if you and your children are in health, it is well. I and the legion are in health. But apparently that message was not sent after this battle, because, you know, Rome had won technically, but it had lost so much that it really wasn't in any mood for celebrating. Now, before we look at more sources, you know, what caused the rebellion? Why Dafka then? So my assumption, not backed up by anything, was, you know, if the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed in 70, well, when you get to the 130s already, you're moving in on 70 years. And maybe they had some idea that just like the first Golos was 70 years, the second Golos may have been 70 years. There is a sense, and, you know, let's look now at source number 9. There is a sense that they were going to be allowed to rebuild the Beis Hamikdash, that Hadrian was going to let them build the Beis Hamikdash. Look at 9. Oh, they're all strange sources, but they're out there. Bracious Rabbah, Bimei Rabbi Yoshua ben Hananya Gazra Malchus Harasha Shi Baneh Beis HaMikdash. Right? How great is that? During the time of Yoshua ben Hananya, the Malchus Harasha, the Malchus Harasha, which is Hadrian in Rome, was going to allow us to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, which is exactly what happened with Bayis Sheni. Koresh allowed us to rebuild. Hoshivu Pipus Velulianus Trapezin Me'ako Arantuchya Vayimisapkin La'ole Gola Kesef V'Zahava Chol Tzarkam. They started a fundraising drive to raise money to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. Aslin Ilin Kutai Va'amrin, the bad guys said, Yediya Lahave Lamalka Dehadein Karta Maradita. You, Caesar, should know that the Jews are organizing a rebellion against you. So in one of the stories, you know, they'd given us permission, which got our hopes up really, really high. Then they were told that we're going to revolt, and they called it off. And not only did they call it off, not only did they revoke permission, they put in all kinds of new restrictions on Jews, right? There was a time where Yerushalayim was called Alia Capitolina, or Temple to Jupiter, when they put a statue there, right? And again, it all goes to the central idea that when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed the first time in 70, it really was not the end. There's a whole history afterwards that ended with the Bar Kokhba revolt, which is when presumably Jews realized that, you know, the Beis HaMikdash was not about to be rebuilt. Okay, let's go back to some simple facts in the history just to help emphasize some of this. And let's start with the following. Okay, we all know that there's this vague idea that Bar Kokhba was going to be or could have been the Melech HaMashiach. Okay, that's something we've known our whole lives. But it turns out, you know, it's not just there were some people who thought he might be the Melech HaMashiach. Go back to the Yerushalmi in source number 2. We skipped the very beginning. Tani Rav Shimon ben Yochai. Rav Shimon ben Yochai says in the name of his Rebbe, Akiva Rabbi Hayad Doresh. My Rebbe, Rabbi Akiva, would say the following. Dorach Kochav Miyakov, right, a pasuk in Balak from the Nevuah of Bilam. A shooting star came out of Jacob. What did he say? Darach Kuzba Miyakov. It was a drasha about Bar Koziba, who he renamed Bar Kokhba. And now you get it explicitly. Rabbi Akiva could have a chami Bar Kuzba. When Rabbi Akiva saw Bar Kokhba coming, have a Amar, he would say, Dein hu Malka Mashicha. There goes the Melech HaMashiach. Okay? Means Rabbi Akiva believed that Bar Kokhba was the Melech HaMashiach. Now again, Rabbi Akiva is not just a guy. Rabbi Akiva is the Gadol Hador. The Gadol Hador proclaimed that Bar Kokhba was the Melech HaMashiach. I don't know about you, I would get behind that movement. If the Gadol Hador shows up and says Bar Kokhba is the man, you know, he's the man. Now, it turns out that was subject to debate. Amalei Rab Yochanan ben Turta, Akiva, Ya'alu asavim b'lechayecha, va'adayin ben David lo yavo. He said, Akiva, you will, this is, I believe, the forerunner for the phrase, you'll be pushing up daisies, right? And it still won't happen. Means there were people, Rav Yochanan ben Turta, for example, who thought Rabbi Akiva was wrong. Bar Kokhba is not the Melech HaMashiach, and this revolt is a mistake. But the fact is that Rabbi Akiva thought that he was the Melech HaMashiach. And it's a side point, but it's fascinating. You know, knowing what we know about the end of Bar Kokhba's life, certainly this idea that he said, Lo tisod v'lo tichsof HaKadosh Baruch Hu, sit this one out. You know, it makes you think to yourself, how could Bar Kokhba, even in theory, have been the Melech HaMashiach? It's clear that he wasn't, but how could he have at least, how could Rabbi Akiva thought so in theory? It's interesting. So this one answer is, okay, he must have lost his mind. You know, at some point, the power went to his head. I don't know, but it wasn't who he was at the beginning.
Eli.
But one second. But what if it's the case that the Melech HaMashiach, you know, doesn't have to be the biggest Talmud Chacham? Let's see about that. Okay, question?
Yeah, well, just a comment. I heard once a number of years ago is our Mishnah that's in the Haggadah, Rabbi Tafrin, Rabbi Elezer ben Azariah, went to Bnei Brak to talk to Rabbi Akiva, is precisely this point, is the rest of the Gedolei Hador wanted to say, knock it off, this guy isn't Melech HaMashiach. So this kind of...
It's a great example. It's a great example of a source that could be read in either of two directions. I agree with you. You could read it as saying they wanted to say, knock it off. You could read it as saying they wanted to support him. Why did they all go to Bnei Brak, to Rabbi Akiva, to acknowledge that he really was the Gadol Hador? But it's interesting. Okay. But let's take a minute, because it really is fascinating, to look at the Rambam Shita about what the Melech HaMashiach is supposed to look at. And it was supposed to look like. It might change our perspective a little bit. Source number three is the Rambam in Hilchos Malachim, Perek Yud Aleph Halacha Yud Gimel, which is where all the dinim of the Mashiach are brought. Says the Rambam, Va'al ya'ale al datcha shehamelech ha-Mashiach tzarich lasot otot u-moftim u-mechadesh dvarim ba'olam o-mechayem meitim u-kiyotze b'dvarim elu. Says the Rambam, don't think, as each of us secretly does, that the Melech HaMashiach is going to be a miracle worker. He's going to bring people back to life. He's going to suspend the rules of nature. Ein hadavar kach. It's not true. And how does the Rambam know it? He says, Shaharei Rabbi Akiva chacham gadol mechachmei mishnah haya. Rabbi Akiva was one of the Baalei Mesora. He was one of the Gedolei Hador. Vehu haya nosei kelav shel ben koziba hamelech, and he was literally, you know, the pot carrier of Bar Kokhba. Vehu haya omer alav shehu hamelech hamashiach. Now you say to yourself, why is the Rambam making Rabbi Akiva look bad? Okay, it's clear that Rabbi Akiva was wrong, but the Rambam is trying to prove his point. The Rambam is saying Bar Kokhba didn't do miracles. And yet Rabbi Akiva believed that he was the Melech HaMashiach. And not just that, and this is controversial, the Rambam says, V'dimahu v'chol chachmei doro shehu ha-Melech HaMashiach. And everybody believed that he was the Melech HaMashiach ad sheneherag ba'avonot. Okay, the Rambam acknowledges, till he died of his own sins. Bar Kokhba sinned terribly at the end of his life, as we saw in the Yerushalmi. And now, says the Rambam, something that used to be axiomatic, I guess, and that is the following. Kevon sheneherag, once he was killed, noda lahem she'eino. Well, then he realized there was once a time where it was obvious. If you're dead, you're out of the running to be the Melech HaMashiach. Right? That's just not how it works. The Melech HaMashiach has to be living. So the Rambam uses Rabbi Akiva's belief in Bar Kokhba as the Melech HaMashiach to prove that the Melech HaMashiach is not a miracle worker. And the Rambam says, and look, v'lo sha'alu mimeno chachamim lo od v'lo mofeit. No one said to Bar Kokhba, wait, if you're the Melech HaMashiach, make it snow in August. Says the Rambam, that wasn't part of it, wasn't necessary. And so he didn't have to do it, and they believed it. Okay, there's a discussion of perhaps the fact that Bar Kokhba did have some gift or what have you, but essentially the Rambam uses Rabbi Akiva's belief in Bar Kokhba to prove that the Melech HaMashiach is just a unifying force. Look at source number six. Here's the Rambam Hilchos Malachim, Perek Yud Bet Halacha Bet. Amru Chachamim. Ein bein olam hazeli mot hamashiach el shibud malchiyut bilvad. Right, that's how the Rambam paskins. that Yemos HaMashiach looks just like the way the world works now, except we'll be independent, we'll be able to establish a society and a kingdom without worries from outside forces. Says the Ram, Yeraem Ipshutan Shel Divrein HaNeviim, Shebitchilat Yemot HaMashiach Tiyem Melchemet Gog U'Magog. The beginning of Yemos HaMashiach will be a gigantic world war, which presumably the Bar Kokhba rebellion qualified for. V'shekodem milchemet Gog u'Magog ya'amod navi liyasher liYisrael u'lachin libam. And before the war, okay, some navi would come along. I don't think the Rambam really means a prophet here. And prepare the people. Ve'eina ba lo letameh ha'tahor v'lo letaher ha'tameh. He's not coming to give you all the secret answers and not to tell you who's really the son of and who's really the father of. Ella lasum shalom ba'olam. The purpose of this person is to bring peace to the world. Okay? No miracles, no nothing else, just bringing peace to the world. And that's why, according to the Rambam, it was possible that Bar Kokhba was this person. Now, another important and fascinating piece to this riddle is the role that Rabbi Akiva played. Obviously, he was the Gadol Hador. Obviously, Rabbi Akiva, according to the Rambam at least, believed that Bar Kokhba was the Melech HaMashiach. It stands to reason then that Rabbi Akiva was obviously the religious leader of the rebellion. He was certainly the posek for the rebellion. And this is proven really in a fantastic and it's almost unbelievable. I mentioned at the beginning that one of the historical proofs to the fact that the Bar Kokhba really established his own kingdom, we have a bunch of letters where he signs it as the Nasi, but we also have coins that were found, and you can see pictures of them online, and you can actually go to the Israel Museum and see coins that were minted in the Bar Kokhba rebellion. And one of the coins, one of the sides, has a picture of the Dalet Minim. Okay? Now watch this. Source number 7. Turns out that the number of Hadassim and the number of Aravos is the subject of Machlokes HaTanaim in Perek Dalet Mishnah Dalet of Sukkah. Says the Mishnah, Rabbi Yishmael Omer, Shlosha Hadassim Ushtei Aravot, Lulav echad ve'etrog echad. That's what we do. We pass him like Rabbi Yishmael. 3 Adasim, 2 Aravos, 1 Lulav, 1 Esrog. Who disagrees with him? Rabbi Akiva Omer, Kishem shelulav echad ve'esrog echad, kach hadas achad ve'arava achad. No, says Rabbi Akiva, 1 Lulav, 1 Esrog, 1 Hadas, 1 Arava. And wouldn't you know it, in the coin that they have in the Israel Museum, there is a picture of the Dalet Minim. 1 Lulav, 1 Esrog, 1 Hadas, and 1 Arava. It means that the rebellion paskined like Rabbi Akiva, even though normative halacha paskins against Rabbi Akiva and like Rabbi Yishmael. Okay, all of this is obviously driving towards the point that everybody should have realized by now, and that is there's no way that Rabbi Akiva, as the religious leader of the revolt, that Rabbi Akiva, as the person who believes that the leader of the revolt is the Melech HaMashiach, did not send his Talmidim to war. As Rav Amital had said, and as apparently many, many people have said, it's inconceivable. Now, let's just be honest about ourselves. The reason why we're even willing to entertain the possibility that Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim did not fight in the war is because when we close our eyes and we imagine the Beis Medrash or the Batei Medrash of Rabbi Akiva, we're thinking of Panovich or the Mir, right? And obviously Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim wore white shirts and borsalinos and black, you know, polyester pants and patent leather shoes. And how could they ever go to the army? But what if none of that is true? What if we're just reimagining it because that's how we see it? You know, we imagine Rabbi Akiva was a Haredi, and we imagine that all of his Talmidim were Haredim. So obviously they didn't fight in the battle. But to believe that is to believe that Rabbi Akiva ignored black letter halacha. Source number 8. Here's a Mishnah in Sota, Perakhet Mishnah Zayin. The Mishnah is talking about who fights in a war. Says the Mishnah, Bamed Dvar Mamurim, when do we say that the war is optional? Bimilchemet Harishut, in an optional war. Aval Bimilchemet Mitzvah, in a mandatory war, in a war that's a mitzvah. Hakol Yotzin, Afilu Chatan Mechedro, Vikala Mechupata. Everybody fights. Even a chassan and kala go straight to fight. And there's another formulation of Rabbi Yehuda, b'med v'amim b'milchemet mitzvah, ava b'milchemet chova, in an obligatory war, hakol yotzin afilu chatan mechedro v'kala mechupato. Okay, that is the halacha. And while there can be some discussion, bizman hazel, although I think it's all wrong, about whether wars that Israel fights now are milchemes mitzvah, milchemes arishus, I think the Rambam passes clearly that they're milchemes mitzvah, nobody could argue that Rabbi Akiva didn't believe that the Bar Kokhba war was a milchemet mitzvah slash chova to which there is no pitur. As a result, it's obvious that Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim fought in the war. There's simply no possibility otherwise. Of course they fought in the war. So then you have a question. Well, and I'll prove it even more before we even get back to it, just because it's so fantastic. Look at source number 10. Okay. Meseches Kitanos, it's hard to know exactly. You know, they're not just small Meseches. They're like minor league Meseches. They almost made it, but they didn't make it. And there's a small Meseches called Meseches Smachot, which is a euphemism because it's all about Avelut. It's called Smachot. And it has sort of what seems like a description of the funeral of one of Rabbi Akiva's sons. Okay, listen to this. Nid kabsu kahal gadol lichvodo shel Rabbi Akiva. All right, a big crowd gathered to honor Rabbi Akiva. Amar lahem, hotziu li safsal min hakfarot, hotziu lo safsal min hakfarot. He said, bring me a chair. They brought him a chair. V'yashav alav darash v'amar. And he sat on it and he said the following. This, I guess, is the hesped. Acheinu Yisrael Shimu. Okay, everybody listen. Lo she'ani chacham, yesh kan chachamim imeni. I'm not the smartest person. There are smarter people than me. V'lo she'ani ashir, yesh kan ashir imeni. It's not that I'm rich. Anshei Darom makirin et Rabbi Akiva. People from the south, where Bnei Brak was, they know Rabbi Akiva. Anshei Galil me'ayin makirin. Apparently, there was a huge crowd. Rabbi Akiva is explaining why such an enormous crowd came. Ha'anashim makirin et Rabbi Akiva. Ha'anashim vataf me'ayin. Right? Why are there women and children here? And here it comes. Ela yodea ani shescharcha meruba. I know, says Rabbi Akiva, that your merit is great. Shelo nitzta'artem ubatem ela lichvo Torah ulishem mitzvah minuchamani. If the purpose of your attendance today is simply to honor Torah, I am consoled. And now he says it. Here's the line. Ilu hayu li shiva banim ukvartim kishemet bini. He said, even if I had 7 sons and they all died the way this son died, and he points out the obvious, v'lo sha'adam rotze likvar et banav. Nobody, God forbid, wants to bury their son. Ela yodea ani shebini ben olam habahu. I know that my son is going to olam haba. Why? Shezika et harabim. Because he acted for the general good. V'chol hamizake et harabim ein cheit ba al yado. And if you act, and certainly if you die, for the overall good, you have no sin, and you go to olam haba. Now, I can't prove it, but many people want to say the obvious, which is Rabbi Akiva's son died in the revolt against Rome. and everybody came to honor him and his son for having died, not just Al Kiddush Hashem, but fighting in the battle for the Melech HaMashiach. And Rabbi Akiva tells them, my son died, you know, fighting for the cause. Now, he doesn't say it explicitly. I admit that. You know, you could argue otherwise. But this can be read as a tacit, you know, confirmation. Rabbi Akiva's son died in the revolt. And so, obviously, we've been driving toward this point the whole way. And that is that the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva did not die of a plague. They did not die in the Beis Medrash. And even more helpfully, perhaps, they did not die al shelo nagu kavod zeh lazeh. They died as part of the Bar Kokhba revolt. Now you'll say to me, okay, that's a great theory, but why would the Gemara hide that fact? Why would the Gemara that we started with, the Gemara in Yevamos, Samach Bet Amid Bet, tell us a story about them dying of a plague? So here's where the history comes in handy. You know what happened after the Bar Kokhba rebellion was put down by the very civilized empire of Rome? Everybody knows the following fact. They did not allow us to bury the bodies, right? The whole bracha of Hatov Vahametiv at the end of benching is Hatov Shelo Hisrichu Vahametiv Shenitnu Likvura. I used to think that, okay, the battle was won or lost on the 9th of Av, and then a week later, the Romans let us come in on Tu B'Av and bury. The answer is no, it was years later. Romans who claimed to be civilized did the most barbaric thing. They did not allow us to bury our dead. You know why? Rome really hated us now. The Bar Kokhba revolt was such an open wound on Rome. Their whole empire almost fell. Their hatred for us was irrational. And they took it out on us. And therefore, the Gemara could not acknowledge the truth of what we're mourning about. We're not mourning 24,000 nameless failed Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. We're mourning the final destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, in 70 CE, the building was destroyed, but we believed that it would be rebuilt. In 135, when the Bar Kokhba rebellion was put down, everybody knew the sad truth. And that is, we're going into a real galus. V'kachava, right? From 135 until 1948, there was not a single Jewish army. For that entire period, you know, halachically, when the state of Israel was founded, there's a 2,000 year gap in halacha in tshuvos that have to do with the army, because it was never halacha lemaisa. That whole area of history had to be rebuilt, and so the Gemara couldn't admit it. So the Gemara wrote it in code. Watch this. What's 12,000 zugim? 12,000 pairs. So we said it was chavrusos. But what if it's not? What if it's like we saw in source number two? Shmonim elef zug shel tokei kranot. Historians claim that in the old days, pairs were a hint to the army because patrols always went out two by two. And so when the Gemara says 12,000 pairs, it doesn't mean chavrusos. It means soldiers. More than that, it's 12,000 pairs or 24,000 students, okay? Which happens to be an incredible machlokes about the size of the standing army of the Jewish people. Source number 11 says the Sifrei in Matos, Elef la-mateh, elef la-mateh, that's the pasuk in Matos, l'chol matos yishot yishlulat tzava. Every shevet has to send elef la-mateh to the standing army. Therefore, says Rabbi Shmuel, Arba'a v'esrim elef. The standing army of the Jewish people was 24,000. Rabbi Akiva Omer, elef lamateh, shneim osar elef. Okay, how great is that? The machlokis is what's the size of the standing army? 12,000 or 24,000. Both hinted at by the way the Gemara says 12,000 pairs of Talmidim. Next, Migvas Ad Antipras. This you'll just have to take my word for. It turns out they were not cities, but you know what they were? They were army garrisons. Okay, the Gemara again is hinting to the army aspect, to the military aspect of the death of Rabbi Akiva. And what's Askara, what's Misara? So Alan at the beginning quoted the Rav as having said, means you were stabbed, there's some stomach disease. Other people, historians, think it might be diphtheria, where that a lot of people died in army from non-sanitary conditions in the army. Okay, but a greater proof is source number 12, the Igeres of Rav Shri Ragon. Rav Shri Ragon, who lived, let's say, in the 900s, wrote a historical document that we use because we think it's pretty accurate. And he just says simply, V'amid Rabbi Akiva Talmidim harbe, V'hava shmada ala Talmidim shel Rabbi Akiva. It was a shmad, meaning that's not askara. That's a terrible thing. The shmad was that, you know, they were killed. Now, I'll admit to you, it still doesn't explain why the Gemara, you know, says al shen lo nagu kavod ze lezeh. One theory is they went to the army and the army was run by people who were younger than them and they weren't as frum as them and they didn't. It's hard to know. I admit that it doesn't answer every question in the Gemara, but it answers a lot of the questions in the Gemara and it fits in nicely with this theory. And really, this is the historical point that after the Bar Kokhba rebellion, we understood that the Beis HaMikdash is gone and the Jewish Commonwealth is gone and it's not coming back anytime soon. And that the mourning that was instituted was not over 24,000 failed Talmidim. It was over the loss of the war. It was over the loss of the Beis HaMikdash. But Rome's anger was so raw and so visceral that they didn't feel like they could write it in the Gemara. And so they wrote it in code. Everybody knows that many of our Gemaras, certainly the Gemaras in Sanhedrin about the Mashiach, they're all censored by Rome, right? You can get a Chesronos HaShas and they'll tell you, I think most Shas's now publish the stuff that was censored. They're all censored. And so it could be that this Gemara was written, you know, in a way where, as I believe, originally everybody knew, wink, wink, what the Gemara was like. Over time, we lost it. But for me, you know, the major benefit is we're not mourning failed Talmidim. We're not, God forbid, thinking that Rabbi Akiva was a failed Rebbe. This is about the Jewish Commonwealth. This is about the fact that in the old days, everybody fought. There was no exemption for Torasso Umnaso. There was no such thing as you guys fight and we'll say Tehillim. They all went. And at core, you know, the mourning of Sfiras HaOmer is not over the failure of Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim. It's over the failure of the Bar Kokhba revolt. I think you could say maybe it's over the failure, quote unquote, of Rabbi Akiva to properly identify the Melech HaMashiach. Although when the Rambam writes it, and I'll end with this, doesn't sound like a criticism of Rabbi Akiva. It sounds like he could have been the Melech HaMashiach. Okay, sadly he wasn't. I don't mean that flippantly. Yeah, it's tragic that he wasn't. But to me, again, where we leave off is that the mourning of Sfiras HaOmer is not over the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. The mourning is over the falling of the Jewish Commonwealth, the realization, and sadly, the historical reality that this was it. Somehow everybody knew this was it. The Beis HaMikdash is not going to be rebuilt in their lifetime and sadly has not been rebuilt yet for 2,000 years. But, you know, God willing, we are moving closer. God willing, the fact that we have a Jewish army. God willing, the fact that all the things that mattered in the Bar Kokhba time are starting to matter now. God willing. Yashkach, Shabbat Shalom.